This is episode 6 on the Pressure Outdoors podcast. This week's episode is brought to you by Sportsman Shield. It's a durable outdoor decal that makes thieves believe your trail camera has a GPS tracking system inside. Fool thieves, hunt more, worry less. You can get 20% off your next order with code UPOUTDOORS20 at checkout. Capital U, capital P, capital O, and outdoors 2020 at checkout. So hop on their website, give them a look, and order you some stickers. And then hunt more and worry less.
I want to put one of them on my Yeti cooler. Ooh, the smoke is bad.
That wouldn't be a bad thing to invent.
What's that?
Some kind of GPS you could put on your... Yeah. Or you just don't buy an expensive cooler.
Hey, I like my Yeti cooler.
Okay? I like my Yeti cooler too.
But... I didn't buy my Yeti. It was a gift.
Well, lucky you. Nobody's going to buy me a Yeti cooler.
I got gifted it too, and I got gifted an Arctic, so...
Yeah, you got that from your work.
Yeah.
Whew. I got laps around this fire.
So I'm going to go ahead, and I'll openly admit right now that we thought no less than 5 minutes ago we recorded this hour-long podcast.
From my shirt pocket.
Only for me to... take the phone, open it up, and look at it to find out that I recorded about 6 seconds and then somehow stopped the recording. So we're back.
Technical difficulties.
Hour two.
Episode 6, part 1-2.
2.0.
So we're going to go over again food plots versus feeders. And the pros and cons of each. And the big thing with a food plot versus a feeder is that the food plots are legal in a whole lot more places than feeders are. Than directly feeding deer with supplemental feed. Most of the time, most people use corn. You can use other stuff. Like if you listen to episode 4, when we were headed to Georgia, my dad was feeding with, say, wheat? Feeding wheat.
What? Out of a feeder?
No. They were just feeding wheat. I don't think they had feeders at that time. That's when they first started
hunting
in Georgia.
Yeah.
You feed wheat. And you said you fed soybeans?
Yeah, keep bears out of it. Or crack corn. Sometimes crack corn.
So there's a whole long list of pretty much anything that's a seed that's like that you could feed.
That's not going to, you know, fall through that hole in the feeder too much.
Right. Yeah. That's not too big that's going to clog that hole either.
Or mineral blocks.
Now, yeah, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Because, and I covered this in episode 4, where the state of Tennessee, you can have a mineral lick out. It's legal to have that as long as it doesn't have any particles of feed in it.
Yeah.
Because you have like those, the Big and J protein blocks. They've got pieces of food, corn and stuff like that in them. I'm not a fan of those. I had...
The weather gets to them.
Yeah, the weather tears them up. And then I had a raccoon tear off a giant chunk of it.
I had the... before, I've had those small little... I can't remember what they call them now. They were like apple flavor or something.
They look like a building brick.
A little brick.
Yeah, just like that. I've used those.
But you know, even feeders. Dude, I've seen... You go check trail cams, and it goes from deer at it, and then next thing you know... there's a coon hanging from the motor of the feeder.
That's right.
And they'll chew on them wires too. I don't know what it is with them coons. I don't think they chew on them. I think it's necessarily them trying to keep themselves from falling, and they end up yanking the wires out.
There's a lot of corn stealers out there, from crows to raccoons and
squirrels.
Squirrels.
Got pictures of squirrels.
Yeah, them
inside
dang things.
A gravity
them dang
feeder.
Things that people screw on the tree. I ain't seen nothing but possums on them.
They screw the peanut butter jar to the tree.
Not even peanut butter.
No, you know what? That's another good thing to talk about. And I didn't cover this last time. Is a quick stop for deer if it's legal to bait where you're at. And the squirrels will tear it up, but the deer love it too. And I've had pictures of them with their whole head. You take a peanut butter jar, go to the Dollar General or Dollar Tree, your dollar store. And everybody's got a Dollar General though. It's 2020. Okay, they're on every corner,
everywhere.
They're more popular. This is about as popular as Walmart.
If you ain't got a Walmart, you got a $3 or $4 generals.
Yeah. Anywhere there was an open field at one point, there's a Dollar General now.
Get you a cheap jar of peanut butter and take a pocket knife and cut the bottom off of it. And then take the lid and screw it to a tree. Take the lid off, screw the lid to a tree, and then screw your peanut butter jar back onto the lid. Deer will tear that up. Chunky or smooth, personal preference.
I'm more of a smooth peanut butter kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't like to have to really chew my sandwich.
Yeah.
Huh? The Reese's peanut butter?
Yeah, get the Reese's.
Not a terrible idea.
Hey, it's worth a shot. I haven't done that in a while, though.
Unless you got some high-end deer might like that Reese's peanut butter.
That's right, man. Expensive deer like that stuff.
That's how you pull the booners out of the bushes. Yeah. The Reese's peanut butter.
I shot this one right here over a Reese's peanut butter jar.
That's right.
But you will get squirrels in that joker. Bad. The squirrels will tear it up.
Just gives you something to shoot on a slow day.
That's right.
So, I tell you one good thing that a feeder is good for is a camera point.
Yeah.
You can collect a lot of pictures off a feeder because deer will come to it and they'll stay with it. So a lot of times you get multiple pictures of the same deer at that feeder.
Yeah, we hadn't.
Which is good for bucks because you get multiple angles.
Right.
Yeah. We had.
And some funny pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about raccoons.
Yeah, we've got some interesting ones, the raccoons, all sorts of stuff.
You know, we had that one.
Rabbits.
We had that one feeder set up with that pine tree behind it that was, had a diameter of 2 inches, maybe. And I kid you not, I checked the camera one time and there was a raccoon. And now mind you, this is just a pine tree trunk. There's no branches on it or nothing. It's dead, just barely standing on the ground. There was a raccoon 6 feet up that pine tree trunk that weighed at least 15 pounds. And I'm like, how? How is that pine tree holding that one raccoon? And that tree never fell over.
And you never get, like, pictures of them, how they get up there.
No, you just
get
them up
there.
It's
just, you know, one time they're underneath it, and the next picture they're hanging from the motor. Son of a gun.
How did you
I'm
get there?
I'm fixing to go out there and spray some Pam on the legs of that thing.
Put it on video when you do it. Aim it at the ground so you can watch them slide. Oh, man.
The entertainment for days right there.
Trying coon-proof a feeder.
Good luck.
It's not possible.
Good luck.
Yeah, you're right. Good luck. You can try.
A lot of times we use a feeder inside of a food plot. As well,
it's good.
And then,
but you know, like, and you know, on the previous podcast,
which previous podcast? The one we didn't recorded.
Yeah, the one we recorded but didn't record.
Warm up.
Yeah. To use both, plant when food plots.
Legal.
Yeah, when plant food legal. Plots and use feeders, but put your feeders, in, you know. A non-pressured area and don't hunt your feeders. Just use it as strictly food source. And you know, not hunting your feeder doesn't mean that if the deer are coming from, if you know for a fact those deer are coming from the west side of your property, that don't mean don't hunt, you know, the trail or the areas they're using to get to that feeder. That just means don't hunt over the feeder.
I'll tell you this, you bring that up, and man, you guys are really, you're getting the good now because we've already talked about all this, so now I've got a lot more stuff coming to mind.
Yeah.
You talk about hunting one side, hunting that trail to the feeder. When I was hunting on Fort Campbell, there was a lot of agriculture fields there, right? And a lot of your guys want to go out and set up on the edge of the agriculture field because deer are going to come out feeding the soybeans or whatever was planted, which they're not wrong, right?
No.
But the deer get smart, and they don't come to that food source till right at dark or after dark,
okay.
Right? And I was one of those guys at one point, sat on the edge of the field, hoping the deer come out, and then I got to thinking. So I moved in about, and I was seeing deer right at dark, you know, seeing deer in my walk out in the field. So I moved into the woods about 800 yards off of said agriculture. 4:30 in the afternoon, the woods are just crawling with deer because they're moving into that staging area. They're holding up inside there, feeding on acorns, whatever else, before they push out into that agriculture at dark. So even with your big, if you had a big food plot, or if you have a piece of property you hunt that has agriculture on it, pressure wise, and especially for that the bigger bucks, if you push back off of that food source into the woods where those deer are going to hang out before dark, if they're coming out right at dark, you're going to get that shot you've been looking for. Instead of just sitting out there on the woods and on the edge and hoping to get lucky.
You know, me personally, I like to just get into the thicket. You know, you get in that thicket, and a lot of times you get in that thicket, you're going to find at least one good little open area in that thicket.
Yeah.
And that's that buck that I killed this past year. I got into the thicket, and I found that one open area. And I set up on a tree where I knew I could see all the way across that. You know, I couldn't see but maybe 60 yards at the most. And that was kind of stretching to be able to shoot that. You know, I was going to have to like pick and choose my shots at 60. But I just got into the thicket because they feel, especially your bigger bucks, feel more comfortable in that thicket, in that cover.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, one of the biggest bucks I killed was shot at not an hour before I killed it in some real thick cover, right, Jordan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shot at and missed completely.
Yeah.
And then I killed it crossing a road.
Yeah. Sucker.
Getting around the food plots a little more. Me and you have planted millet before growing up. We didn't really plan it for deer, but it ended up being more of a food source for deer than what we were trying to go for.
Yeah, no, we had planted that millet with the intention.
It didn't get over an inch.
It was about 4 inches tall at its highest, yeah.
We were trying to get it to come up and seed, and I don't think I ever let it get that big enough.
And you know, a good way to gauge, you know, whether your food plot's just not growing or whether it's getting ate, is to take, you know, you could get yourself just a small, it ain't got to be, but maybe a
almost like a 4 foot long
piece of like chicken wire and just wrap it into a circle.
You can use one of those tomato cages. Wrap that tomato cage, you wrap it in chicken wire.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, wrap it. Yeah.
Wrap your tomato cage in chicken wire and then it's mobile. You can just stick it in the ground and it allows everything inside that cage to grow up to the height that everything else would be if it wasn't getting mowed down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll give you a gauge of whether your food plot is growing as it should be or
whether it's getting eight.
Yeah, whether it's getting eight down.
Well, I know you'd seen deer in the summer.
I had.
So that's kind of a good indication that it was getting eight. Seeing deer in it too,
but yeah, that's the best indicator you can look for when you're scouting for deer. The best sign that there's deer in the woods is actually seeing deer.
Yeah.
And I mean, you laugh, and I'm sure everybody is saying that and listening to us now wants to chuckle a little bit, but I'm really being serious.
Oh yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah,
if you're out there in the daylight and you're seeing deer, it, and I don't mean bumping deer, you're moving through the woods and you bump a deer and it runs, that's good, deer are there, but they're bedded. But if you can crawl, if you can sit in an area and have a deer walk across while you're out scouting, or you can find deer feeding somewhere during the daytime, that's where you need to be in the daytime because that's where they are.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like in the daytime, and it may just be area specific, but like where we're at, and that, you know, daytime, a lot of people want to sit, you know, till like 9 or 10 o'clock. But it's crazy that where we're at now, a lot of the deer, and I feel like it's probably pretty general to everywhere, the deer move later in the day if they're going to move in the day.
Yeah, well, we had that 6-point at the feeder in front of your ladder stand at 11 o'clock.
Why yeah. I never did, but I always, especially on that property, I really wanted to hunt at like noon. Just go out to stand like 11.
Yeah, which really isn't a bad idea. And I'm honestly bad about that too. I don't like to sit, you know, come 11 o'clock, I'm like.
You get antsy, especially yeah, if you're not
I'm ready to go
anything.
Back. I want to eat. And, you I know, mean, you could bring snacks to the stand, but it ain't like what you're going to eat if you go back to camp.
You know, I mean.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I feel like, and it's.
If you can bear it during the rut, sit all day. Because those deer move.
And pick you a good, pick you. And honestly, that's food plots versus feeders. Come rut, I would rather be hunting a good size food plot.
Yes. A food plot can sustain more deer at one time than a feeder can.
Yep.
You can get deer, you can get 8 or 9 deer spread out across the food plot where they'd all have to gather around a feeder.
Yeah.
So.
But feeders are also good for patterning deer.
Right.
Growing up, most of the deer I've seen were usually, I might have seen them in an area where a feeder was, but most of the time I didn't see them under the feeder feeding.
This year,
I've seen them in that area.
This year was the first time I actually watched deer walk up and eat corn from underneath the feeder while I was in tree stand.
I can remember more than once. I mean, and I was on the opposite side. Well, maybe 100 yards or so, maybe more, from the feeder. The deer would come out on the opposite side of the field, browse, and move through the field and never even go to the feeder. Now, that's not saying I wasn't seeing deer tracks under the feeder. This was back before I had cameras and stuff, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, you'd go by where the feeder is and where the corn or whatever was there, and you see a little bit and you see deer tracks all in it. But when I was hunting and actually seeing those deer, I hardly ever saw them under the feeder. But I've seen deer come out and feed where I had millet planted and feeding on the millet.
So you want to talk about a budget? I think Bill's about caught a rabbit.
Did you?
Really?
Yeah, underneath the camper over there.
I hope she did.
They got away from underneath the shed.
Dang.
Sorry for the interruption. Jordan's little Boykin Spaniel about caught herself a rabbit. It distracted me. Man, what was I going to say?
Something about the budget. And
So you talk about people... If you're getting real on a real hard up budget, we're talking maybe a young kid who can't afford
you got a camera at all. Job, you're going to school.
Can't afford a camera at all. It's a camera or a tree stand, right? Buy a tree stand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get the tree stand.
Climber. Look at your tracks on the way out. Or when you're walking out. Your steps, you're going to probably walk the same trail out you walked in. So look where you stepped in the morning. Look for tracks inside your tracks, because that gives you a time frame of when deer move through that area. So you know that if you drove your truck in there, where you drove your truck, or where you walked, if you're going back out and there are deer tracks inside your tire tracks or inside your footprints, those deer walked after you did.
Yeah, that's always pretty frustrating. You almost want to stop and throw your hat real quick.
And you know what? I
see that. Dadgummit.
You know, when it comes to even being on a hard up budget, the nice thing about technology these days, you can get cameras cheap. I mean,
you
cheap,
can.
Cheap.
And a little trick.
They might not give you the best quality, and you might not, you know, it might not take, you know, pictures perfectly timely. But you're going to get something out of it.
Some of the best performing cameras I've got.
Cheap.
That have lasted the longest. And, dude, I've opened those cameras up and water has come out. And the camera's still working. I paid $30 for on Amazon. Yeah. The Primos Bulletproof. The little tiny square camera. It's cheap. It's not easy to program. You have to have a laptop to program it to get your time and date in there. And so once you set it, I mean, I set it and forget it. I set it. I don't change for daylight savings time. I just understand, at least on those cameras, I just understand that, hey, we lost an hour, so this deer didn't move at 5. It moved at 4. But they're $35-40. You can find them on sale. Talk about sales. Walmart right now, end of deer season, you can get cameras for $10.
Yeah.
So it's there. You just gotta hunt for it.
Yeah.
Put in the work, and you talk about, and I'll cover this now because we covered it earlier. Just because we talk about a budget doesn't always mean it's going to be cheap.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to save your money, find it on sale, something.
Because cheap and good don't usually coincide with each other.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to sacrifice and to get something that's going to be
budget,
good.
Budget.
Like, one thing you want to spend money on is boots and a tree stand if you're hunting whitetails. Because you want to want something you can sit in all day.
But I'll tell you this. Here's where your budget comes. A perfect example of what you're talking about. A tree stand. You can get a Summit Viper aluminum for $300.
Yeah.
Right? You can go buy one made of steel for $150.
Yeah.
The steel one is considerably heavier. But it's considerably cheaper.
But it's half the price.
It's half the price. That's your budget. Yeah. You still have the same quality tree stand, but you're sacrificing what you're saving in dollars, you're spending in sweat. Yeah. And that's generally
started hunting, we weren't humping around.
Dude,
stupid, heavy, awkward.
Some of the raggediest, and I look back at some of the climbers I hunted in when I was younger.
Oh my
and I'm
gosh.
Like, dude, that's
a miracle. You're still here.
Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah,
terrifying.
Some of the climbers I shot deer out of. Jeez.
Yeah, that old worn and sweat climber. That was about 4 feet long.
You remember that one we had? It might be the same one. The one that faced the tree.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
yeah.
But son, you want to talk about comfortable? You could. I mean, for me at least, I could kick up in that thing.
Oh yeah,
facing
you could kick
that
your
tree,
feet out on
yeah,
the on the bottom
that tree,
of it.
You could kick your feet up.
it wasn't uncomfortable, but it was. Oh no, you wouldn't. No, it, you wouldn't fall asleep in that for a fear of your life.
No,
yeah,
it didn't have any kind of like teeth or anything. It just had a blade on the back. Mm.
There was no cable.
Yeah.
There was no pull one pin, adjust the cable. That was a wing nut on a bolt on both
and a
sides.
Chain.
Yeah. No, a wing nut on a bolt with a kind of a V-shaped blade.
Oh, God.
And you would move it out one hole at a time on both sides to make it fit your
and
tree.
And when you put it down, you kind of bounced on that thing to make sure it, you know, bit real good.
Like, yeah. You don't usually typically fall asleep in a climber in a pine tree either. Especially on a windy day.
Oh, I disagree. That's the best day for me to fall asleep. It'll rock me right to sleep.
Trust me.
It don't rock me because I go.
I trust my climber.
You wouldn't believe how far a pine tree can lean before that joker will break.
I trust my climber.
I ain't worried about the pine tree butt breaking. I'm worried about me falling out of the stand.
I trust my climber. I have a Summit.
But just falling out, not necessarily.
Do you wear your hunter safety harness?
Have you ever fell in a harness? It doesn't feel very good. No, I haven't either, but it still hurts when you fall, even if you do have a harness on.
Hurts a lot less than hitting the ground, though.
Yeah, it does, but at the same time.
But, I mean, I trust my climber not to fall off the tree. I have a Summit Viper Max 180. I can either face the tree or face away from the tree. And I didn't buy that climber for the fact that I could face away or to the tree. So much as I bought the climber for the fact that the front of it is rounded out, and it gives me a lot more room inside the climber.
Yeah.
So it sits a lot more comfortable, and I can sit a lot longer in that climber with more leg room in it. And I love that climber. I've killed quite a few deer out of it. I killed what could be and I'm not big on scoring deer. I haven't scored any of the deer I've shot, but I believe could be possibly the biggest buck I've ever killed it. Definitely the second biggest buck I've ever killed. If not, it's a matter of half inches if it's smaller than that 9-point. But I'm sure he's bigger, and I'm sure he's bigger by quite a bit. But I killed it out of that climber. And
man. You know, and honestly, some of the, you know, we're talking about feeders versus food plots. The spots that I have shot at or seen the biggest bucks, I was neither hunting over a food plot or a feeder. And I was nowhere near either one of those. I was just in a good, thick area.
Where that buck had a lot of cover.
Yeah, where they felt comfortable. You know, and a lot of hunting comes down to really just, you know, getting to know the area that you're in.
Yeah.
And knowing where the heaviest traffic is.
So,
and that doesn't even have to do with cameras. That just has, like you were talking about, watching tracks.
Yeah. So we'll get back into this. We've kind of sidetracked a little bit into way off the feeders and food plots.
Yeah.
And more into the very budget mounted stuff. But like has been said, you don't need a feeder or a food plot to kill big deer. I didn't kill either one of my real big bucks. In fact, the only thing I've shot out of a food plot has been does.
Yeah, does.
Yeah. The big eight that I shot with my bow, the first buck I killed with my bow, was not in a food plot. It was in a logging road. The 13 point I shot was down deep down in the bottom. And the big nine that I shot in Georgia he was crossing the road.
And the big nine that you shot that I shot at before you shot it.
He was in a deep bottom shot at him and didn't hit it, and then I shot it later.
I hit a tree. That was that damn tree jumped out in front of me. And...
it happens.
Yeah.
It's we've talked about it on the podcast, the trees that jumped out in front of the wheel, too.
Yeah, the back of my truck.
that tree jumped out in front of your arrow.
That was a limb, wasn't it?
That was a limb. That limb just reached down and swatted that arrow is what it did. Actually, it swatted it up to where it went right over the top of that freaking monster's back. Hey, she's comfortable.
Yeah.
But, so, feeders. Feeders are good for concentrating your food source to one spot, and you can put protein in feeders and concentrate that in one spot. You can collect a lot of pictures from a feeder in one spot, but they're not legal to hunt over in about half the states.
Yeah. And you know, I've never been one to really, I may have already said this, but to hunt directly over a feeder. I don't care for it. I love feeders. I'm a huge advocate of feeders. I like to set feeders out just because, like you said, it's just that.
It gives you a good survey of what's on your property.
Exactly. But I'm more so for hunting the trail to the feeder.
Right.
And which in a lot of those states where you can't hunt over a feeder, you can sit out of sight of that feeder.
Right. There are some states. I wouldn't say a lot of those states. A lot of the states don't allow you to feed with a feeder because of chronic wasting disease and the concentration of the deer in that area around your feeder, because the chronic wasting disease spreads through mm-hmm. contact. So deer get close to each other, and that's how that spreads from deer to deer. And we don't want that. So,
by the way, if you catch this in time and listen to it, you can go on our Instagram page and see the other podcast.
Yes, we did go live on Instagram.
We got it live. So if you get to us,
follow us on Instagram. Follow us. Get your friends to follow us. Instagram, tell your mom and them.
Share it. Tell your friends about us.
And also interact. You know, if you got questions for us, you can. If you go on our Facebook page, you can post. We're not, go ahead and post something. If you got, you know, post your bass fishing this summer or something. You know, you know what I mean?
I don't know that you can post to the Facebook page.
Yeah, you can. I thought Ian could make posts to us.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess you can post to the page.
I think you can post to this.
We get a good following, the podcast or anything, I'll create a group on Facebook. We can all get in and interact with each other and make posts and stuff like that. But right now, we don't have a very huge following, but we're getting there.
We're getting there. It's growing.
The word is getting out.
That's right.
But when you talk about feeders and protein, as far as your protein's good for,
you know,
not only antler growth, But your does need it too when they're growing fawns and raising fawns, because they need that those vitamins and minerals and protein and stuff like that to have a healthy offspring. And if without a healthy offspring, you're not going to get that next generation of monsters.
Yep.
So you've got to keep up with all sizes of deer herd. And I feel like it's easy to neglect the does when you're out there just
simply hunting. Oh, yeah, because there was like bucks. But
yeah, well, social media has made it into that monster buck fest.
Yeah.
But that's killing not what limits. It's about. It's about conservation.
Pile pictures.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, without your does, you don't have your bucks.
Right.
So, you know, you got to take care of them, too. And you can do a lot of that in food plots, too, but it's really a matter of doing your research and finding out, you know,
what you need to plant.
Yeah, what you need to plant for those deer for that time of year, or, like, specifically what you're looking for to do with your deer.
So, I would venture to say, and I haven't done a lot of research into this, but I think, no, I'm going to tell you that you can get more protein for less money out of planting a food plot.
Oh, absolutely. I'd be 100% willing to agree with that.
Than you can by dumping protein pellets into a feeder.
Because your feeder's going to sling your protein out, but it's not guaranteed that your deer are going to eat every bit of that protein hits the ground.
It's going to get washed into the dirt. It's going to get picked up by raccoons and everything else, which your secondary.
And it's not guaranteed your deer are going to eat all of whatever you plant, too, but.
Well, it's going to remain green. It's going to remain a food source until frost kills it or whatever else.
Until it just come in seeds, and tear it up. Seeds and dies off. And
that being said, you in a lot of states outside of the South, your food plots are only going to last about as long as your feeder does. If you hunt up like where I hunted in Tennessee and Kentucky, if you plant an early season plot, it's only going to last till the first frost. So season comes in, and I'm not counting the velvet hunt in Tennessee in August. Season comes in September, and your first frost a lot of the times happens in October, and you could easily get 6 to 8 weeks out of a full feeder feeding once a day. We fed once a day out of our feeders. We did feed twice at first, but I fed once because we started feeding once. One, it saves corn. Two, we had deer. You feed in the morning, feed in the evening. Well, I started noticing that turkeys were coming in during the day, eating all the daytime corn, and deer were coming in the middle of the night and eating what was thrown out in the evening. So we switched to throwing corn only in the morning, so that the deer wanted to get corn from the feeders, they had to come in the daytime to get that feeder. And we started seeing more pictures in the early afternoon after that. Turkey's still there every day tearing it up.
Sometimes they'd be there right after shooting light, like right after you'd get out of the stand.
Right.
They'd show up. I mean, that's a whole different story. We had a lot of pressure. We've talked about it before. We were surrounded by dog clubs, which, I mean, don't have a problem with people running dogs, but it's hard to still hunt in the middle of that.
It is. And that's where the podcast got its name, is that if you're hunting public land and you're where we were hunting on private property, the deer were under a lot of pressure. So you got under pressure outdoors out of that one. So now you know.
And like you were talking earlier with your food plots, if you plant a taller food plot like corn or whatever, it could also double as a bedding area.
Right. I used to go when they would plant corn in the agriculture fields in Fort Campbell. I would always get out there when I started seeing harvesters and combines coming in. I would always try to hunt in the woods off the food plot or off of the agriculture fields when they're harvesting corn, because deer are bedded down in that corn and they're pushing them out of that cornfield back into the woods when they're harvesting. I walked scouting one morning during squirrel season around the edge, the outside edge of the cornfield, and I saw 25 deer. I bumped 25 deer out of that cornfield, bedded down. Walk around in there. So they'll bed in that taller stuff. If you plant corn, you can plant millet grows tall enough. When it grows tall enough.
If they let it get tall enough.
Sorghum grows tall enough for them to bed in. There's a lot of stuff you can plant that'll grow tall enough for them to bed in.
About sunflowers.
Sunflowers, yes. And that's devil's grape for dove.
Yeah. And a lot of those, almost every single one you named too, you can use to bird hunt over at some point as well. So you're getting, you know, you're killing, you know, not
hold up,
no
say
pun
it,
in,
say
yeah,
it.
No pun intended. You're killing two birds with one stone.
I knew it was coming. I could see it in your face. But you're right. You are. You have that multi-purpose plot that you can do a lot with.
Trick is letting it get up high enough to seed.
Yeah, I mean, we planted brown top millet last year.
Like 4 inches, you said?
And it never made past 4 inches. Yeah, the deer were just mowing it down.
And I don't know what it is, but, you know, that one year we hunted and Tifton.
Oats. That's the other thing we used to plant. I don't know, it just came to me. We used to plant oats.
We planted oats,
they'd
bird
that up
seed,
too.
Iron clay peas, and ryegrass.
Yeah.
That one year we hunted in Tifton, we planted all them dang turnips. Son, the deer.
The size
just,
of softballs.
Yeah, but the deer just, I mean, the tops on them, the deer just tore them things up, man. They ate the mess out of them turnips.
I can see hogs getting in turnips.
Oh, that. Yes.
We didn't really have hogs
there. We didn't have hogs there at that time.
But, dude, I'm talking about, we had, the, screw the size of softballs, we had dang turnips the size of youth basketballs.
look like small watermelons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And.
But the deer, there was no shortage of deer getting into those turnips.
I bet, man.
And you get them turnips, I mean, them little teeny tiny seeds, dude. You could spread them things like no other.
Get it out there. And we talk about.
But turnips aren't a cheap thing to plant either.
No.
Turnips are expensive.
But a lot of those expensive, you get into those more expensive seeds like clover. Clover is expensive to plant. But clover will come back every single year after you plant it the first time. Even after you till the soil, plant something else, the clover still comes back. And deer love clover. So that's, you know, cost versus reward in that instance. If you got the money, you spend it there, you plant your clover, and now your food plot's still going to come back. And I wouldn't just plant clover. I would plant some other stuff with it.
Oh, yeah, you mix it in there. It's just like the turnips. You buy you, and granted, we were on such a large lease at that point that when you bought a bunch of seed, it wasn't anything because everybody split it.
Right.
You know, but when you're on, you know, just a, you know, a three-man or a four-man, a small lease, you buy you a little bit of turnips and you or whatever, and you mix that in with your seed.
Right. And the big thing here, especially in the Southeast, there's not as much public land as there is out west, so you do see a lot of deer leases, and it is possible to lease on a budget.
Yeah,
we did it for 2 years.
We did.
Yeah, it's just a matter of getting a property to where you can get enough people.
We had 6 guys last year, and we paid $300,
like
$320.
That was including
for a year.
Our camp.
That was including our camp for a year. So, that's something you can save up for throughout the year and turn around and pay that again. The first year, we paid $610, but we had 12 guys, and we also had 875 acres.
But,
so.
I mean, for us, for me, I had to buy an out-of-state license, which is $400 for the state of Georgia.
It's a little over $300. It's not $400.
It's close to $400.
Is it?
Yeah. Close to $400.
It's $375. Breyer buys the fishing license and everything. Mm. If you buy just the hunting license, it's $375.
But I just go ahead and get it. Then it covers everything.
I haven't bought it now. So if you're going to go walk over there, I'll take one.
I just handed him my koozie and put him dip in.
I haven't bought an out-of-state license for Georgia in a while.
That's another thing.
You're fixing to have to do that.
I know. I just moved back to Florida from Georgia, and now I got to buy an out-of-state license next year, and I'm not looking forward to it. That's going to put a hurting on the budget.
I don't know.
But you know, to me, I would rather pay the $375 every year than try and deer hunt in Florida.
Well, the deer hunting in Florida has improved exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fine.
That's what it was when we were younger.
The places that are closest to us aren't that great, like Ocala. But, I mean,
Well, that's not true.
Green swamp or rich
the places that are open to the public.
As far as public around, land, that's what I'm saying.
Well, not even public land, but they're just open, free run. Ocala Natural Forest is a whole lot better than it used to be. But it's not as good as if you were to put in for quota hunts like Rock Springs or Seminole Forest. And it's pretty easy to draw a Rock Springs run.
Yeah.
You put in for it. They have a lot of guys going there and hunting.
I say I'm going to do it every year, but I never do. But I'm actually going to do it next year.
Put in for it?
Not just there. I'm going to put in all kinds of places next year.
And, man, Florida has some awesome draw hunts you can do.
Sandbar.
I was going to get to that. You've got the white-tailed deer, and you can draw some good tags, and they usually kill a daggum monster out of Rock Springs every year.
Yeah.
At least one.
And you've got alligator tags, which there's only a few states you can do that in. You can draw alligator tags and hunt alligator down here. You got the Osceola turkey,
which is the only place for tags, and you want to hunt, let me know. I'll run.
Run for gators?
Yeah.
The only place you can hunt the Osceola turkey is here in the state of Florida.
That's not just us here on the podcast. That's open invitation. You know, you put fuel in the boat, we'll run gators.
Yeah.
How you gonna sneak up on a gator in your boat?
Real quick.
I'm serious. Real quick. Like,
you just run up on them quick enough.
Yeah, it's got enough speed that you can pretty much outrun your sound.
And then, well, Florida has one thing that you can hunt it here in the state of Florida or in Southeast Asia. And that's the sandbar deer. Sandbar deer were brought and introduced to St. Vincent's Island off the coast of Florida on the Gulf Coast a long time back. And they tried to introduce them to the whole state, but they only stayed and kind of flourished in Sandbar Island. And you can put in for a quota tag.
St. Vincent Island.
Or yeah, you're right. St. Vincent Island. They only kind of flourished there. The sandbar deer only flourished in St. Vincent's Island. But you put in for the tag, you're not guaranteed to draw that, but you keep using those preference points year after year, and you will draw it. And they are the third largest deer species, only second to elk and moose. And they're just really cool-looking deer. Kind of looks like an elk without all the horns.
Yeah.
But definitely something I want to do. That's a once-in-a-lifetime hunt.
Yeah.
But it can be more than once in a lifetime if you keep putting in for those tags. Because it's not any extra expense, I don't believe. No, you just put in for the draw, you draw, and then you go hunt. But you have to hunt with a bow or a muzzleloader.
Yeah.
You can't hunt with a rifle. So, that's something to look into. You can look into anything for your state. Every state's got those public land places where you can draw and where you can, the quota hunts where you draw for. And you've got your open public lands.
You know, one thing, this is off of what you're talking about, but one thing that we talked about earlier that we haven't talked about again on this one is that your food plots, you know, you don't have to, they don't have to be done with a tractor or anything crazy. You can literally go in there and just scratch out in a bottom that, you know, if you got a good sunlight area, you can scratch your leaves back and just disturb your surface of the soil and get your seed down and then just kind of scratch back over it.
Well, that throw and grow seed is, it does exactly that.
Yeah.
But if you scratch that surface, you're going to get a lot better results out of it.
Yeah.
And that's the money spent is a rake.
You know, getting a lot of
steelhead rake.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and a four-wheeler nowadays, you know, you go on Facebook right Marketplace or something, you can get a nice little something, at least enough to pull your disc around or a drag. You can get a four-wheeler pretty decently cheap.
The key to that is finding one that ain't been run through the mud.
And it's not even necessarily ran through the, I mean, you can get one that's been ran through the mud, but if it's been maintained, it ain't gonna hurt it that it's been ran through the mud. I've seen foolers. I got a buddy that's got a fooler that loves water. You can put that thing. Oop, coyote's firing up.
Yep.
Water. And
yeah, you can put it in the water, in the water, in the water. That thing, that dang pooler has been in the water for 5-6 years.
Yeah, he's selling it.
Ain't nothing wrong with it.
Is he selling it?
No.
You know why he's not selling it?
Because
it still runs.
Because, yeah,
that's my point. You go
because
on Facebook
he ain't selling it because it loves the water.
You go on Facebook Marketplace and there's people that are selling them four wheelers that are.
Most of them people that are selling them. You go on there and you get you a Honda. If it's snorkeled or something, people are selling them Hondas because the big hoorah is to have some high powered fooler that'll, you know, do wheelies and skim across the top of the crap, and people ain't about that little slow riding. People just want to pull a little dookie.
I just want a workhorse.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
I don't care. I can care.
It don't have to be fast. As long as it'll pull that disc and get me from where I need to go to where I am to where I need to go.
They make stuff. Tractor Supply has all the stuff to do. The rototillers and stuff to do it by hand too.
That's true.
You know, and I actually looked into last year getting a hand rototiller off of, like a gas-powered hand rototiller off Facebook Marketplace.
Again.
Yeah. And I found some for $80. Didn't jump on that. But that's also a great spot. If you're going to do some small plots, just a hand rototiller, and you could do a quarter acre. It wouldn't be too bad. I mean... No. But like I said,
you're gonna want somebody else to seed it after you rototill it.
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, what you don't spend in cash, you're gonna pay for in sweat.
If you're on a lease with a few buddies and
which
all
ain't
of your
bad
own budget,
either, man. You, that
and
was,
that's how
yeah.
you're planting your food plots, man. You go out there and you make a work day out of them. We're gonna
you
put
get
in
out
food
there with a couple
weekend,
buddies,
you know?
And you put some sweat in and you have a good time.
You go out there.
It ain't nothing to put some sweat in as long
Look,
as you're
when you're working at the hunting camp is a whole lot different from being at work. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're out there with your buddies, y'all are shooting the breeze while you're working.
Beer.
I could have a beer or two mini while
yeah.
I'm working at a hunting camp.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
But I can't do that at work.
Exactly, that's what I'm getting at.
You're gonna have a better time.
Responsibly or
legally you can't do that at work.
I would much rather go out and work at the hunting camp than go to work.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
As it goes back, you can't have I've never had a bad day in the woods or on the water, whether I caught fish, whether I didn't catch fish
or
caught fish.
I've had bad days on the water.
That's a little different.
Yeah.
But tell me, is being broke down in your boat still better than being at work? Probably not, because it's costing you money.
I would say on a day, if... You know, for some reason, it's weird. Every time I break down, I never have beer in the boat.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I could actually relax while I was broke down, it wouldn't be so bad.
Maybe it's a good thing, Jordan.
Yeah, I'd end up... Well, I'm getting pulled back. I'm not driving it, so...
Yeah, but you got to drive the truck back.
Does the game warden feel the same
That's
way?
Why That's you always question. Have a DD.
Well, but tell us about your budget
feeder. Yeah, so I found a industrial size piece to a gutter, and it's just about 12 by 12 at the top, and it comes down and it necks down to, I don't know, it's probably 5 by 5 where it necks down. And I found that it worked. And I knew I could make a feeder out of it, so I brought it home. And I always keep sheet metal around. So, you know, I brought it home and I, you know, cut and broke what I needed for basically a trough or a neck to finish off the neck or whatever for the feeder. And I welded it all up and put it on there, and it holds about 100 pounds of corn. And I've had deer at, I literally have, other than the wire for the welder, I have nothing invested into that feeder. Because I got the sheet metal given to me. So
use your imagination. That's all it comes down to. We built trough feeders.
I gave them away. I had feeders built out of PVC.
And I've seen a lot of them built out of PVC. Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon to build feeders out of PVC pipe. We made some out of 55-gallon drums. But,
yeah.
So we're coming to the end here. So Under Pressure Outdoors tip of the week, being as we're recording this on Valentine's Day, we'll talk about eating deer hearts and animal hearts, man. If you're not saving that heart when it isn't completely destroyed, you're missing out. I like to take mine, cut it up nice and thin, bread it, put it in a frying pan. Delicious. Briar, what do you got?
My Under Pressure Outdoors tip of the week is you can't kill them on the couch and you can't catch them on the couch. So that means is get outside. You wake up, you're going hunting, and you wake up in the morning and it's a bad morning to get out there anyways. You never know. That could be, you could kill the best buck of your life that morning. So get outside and get out, get with it.
The biggest buck I have ever seen in my life, and I missed him at 30 yards on a rainy afternoon.
That's my point, you know.
Okay.
With a bow. It's a tree limb's fault. I'll get into that story another day.
And before I throw my tip out there, I just want to add to yours that not even, you know, deer hearts, duck hearts.
Oh, just hearts in particular, hearts whatever in particular, you kill.
Yeah.
Never eat a pig heart.
I haven't tried pig heart. But hearts in particular, it's good. They're great. The duck hearts, we just sauteed.
They kind of have the consistency of liver. They can be kind of chewy, but you can marinate that out and buttermilk and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they don't taste like liver. I do not like liver at all. Blech, gross. Okay. But I like deer heart and duck heart. The way we did those duck hearts was really good. I want to pickle some duck hearts.
Yeah.
So.
But my tip of the week is, being as we're recording this on Valentine's Day, I just want to say be careful with, you know, what you're doing tonight or here lately, because 9 months from now you could be hunting, or depending on what you're doing, you could be listening to a screaming baby or trying to hoard diapers. And
I've got, you know, I've got two kids, and I was not that we planned it this way, but both my kids were born in April, so, and that frees me up. No birthdays. The only birthday, matter of fact, that happens in my family during deer season is mine. I'm going hunting. So, and it's great. I got, you know, my kids are in April. My wife's in February. So, we're good to go. But
even the boys playing baseball instead of football. So, that's in
springtime. Yeah, get them into baseball in the springtime.
I'm going to have to miss a few turkey.
But kids, you know, you got kids. Get your kids in the woods, man. And because I took my son for the first time this year. He's 3, and that was the most fun I've ever had. Just getting him out there. He had a blast. And that's what it's about.
Yeah. And talk about getting people out there. Like, Matt's already contacted you, and you've got with Matt.
Yeah.
We're more than willing. Anybody that listens, if you get your friends listen, anybody that listens, if they want to get out there, just hit us up.
If you don't know, we'll teach you. If you have questions, ask. We'll answer.
We're more than willing to get anybody out
there. Hit us up on Instagram. Give us a follow. Hit us up on Facebook. Follow us there. Shoot us an email at underpressureoutdoors@gmail.com. We'll get back to you. If we don't know the answers, we'll find the answers. And if you get on Apple Podcast, hit that far right-hand star. Give us that 5-star review. Leave a review. Give us your critiques. Give us your questions. Give us your concerns.
Yeah, if you want to join, if you have anything to throw in and you want to join one time, let us know.
We could do that. But
we need new faces.
You know what? Until next week, we'll see you guys.